Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Hosts Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm Jean Thomas. Our conversation today is with my co-host on the podcast, Master Gardener Volunteer Tim Kennelty. And today we'll be talking about one of Tim's passions, incorporating native trees and shrubs into your landscape. Tim, let's start with the basics. What makes a tree or shrub a native, and why is that important?
Well, first, I love being interviewed by you, Gene. It's very exciting to be here as a guest. Yeah, native tree or shrub is one that's been here for hundreds or thousands of years since pre-colonial time. It's a plant that has co-evolved with all the insects and birds. And so many times they have very, very close relationships. If you don't have that tree or shrub, you won't have that insect or you won't have that bird. And that's why it's important.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the benefits of planting native trees and shrubs. Why would I want to plant something that I could just find along the highway?
That's a great question. I'm going to give you a quote from Audubon. Audubon says, "Native plants are the ecological basis upon which life depends, including birds and people. Without them and the insects that co-evolved with them, local birds would not survive." I mean, that's the bottom line, is they're basically the base or the cornerstone of the food web. And so what we're talking about is if we don't have those plants, we don't have those insects, and we don't have those birds. And what's really important about talking about natives is we're really losing a lot of native plants because of all the invasive plants and because of habitat loss.
We've talked about planting for pollinators on the podcast. What's the connection between native trees and shrubs and the pollinators?
Well, one of the really important things about native trees and shrubs, if you are really planting for pollinators, a lot of people think a pollinator garden is just a bunch of perennials. But what happens is that bumblebees and other native bees and even some butterflies are out looking for pollen. And there's really no, you know, in March, April, there's really no pollen from perennials because your perennials haven't come up. So they're really depending upon native trees like red maples that bloom in March or pussy willows or spice bushes. That's really the pollen that is keeping them going. And so Okay. You really want to have plants blooming throughout the season from the very, very beginning, March and April. And that's generally trees and shrubs through September, October. So that's why you really want to think about having trees and shrubs for pollinators.
Now, I just realized that we just committed a sin of omission. Define a pollinator for me, Tim.
A pollinator is an insect or sometimes birds, but mostly you're talking about bees or butterflies that are taking pollen from one plant to another and helping that plant reproduce. And generally, we're talking about bees. Butterflies are not as effective pollinators, but we're generally talking about bees. Sometimes beetles, sometimes flies as well.
Okay, thank you. Butterflies and moths, since we're talking about the pretty fluttery things, what connection do they have to the native woodies?
Well, again, there are plants like buttonbush and bottlebrush buckeye that bloom in the middle of the summer that a lot of bees and butterflies go to for nectar, the adults. But the more important connection really is that a lot of butterflies and moths need larval plants. They have plants that, since they've co-evolved with them, they lay their eggs on those plants and their caterpillars will eat those plants and only those plants. And many times you're talking about hardwood trees and shrubs. So examples might be an oak tree. The native oaks that we have are larval plants for more than 500 different caterpillars and butterflies. And then you'll have something like a black cherry, which if you like to have beautiful butterflies in your garden, like tiger swallowtail and red spotted purple and viceroys. That's the larval plant or one of the larval plants for that butterfly. And then you have even more tight relationships, like if you're looking to attract spice bush swallowtails to your garden. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but they're beautiful butterflies. The only larval plants for that particular butterfly are the spice bush and sassafras. So if you don't have a sassafras or a spice bush in your garden, you're not going to have the plant that's the larval plant. They're not going to have any plant to lay their eggs on, and the caterpillars won't have leaves to eat.
Okay, so are the natives important in supporting the different bird species too?
Yeah, absolutely. For a number of reasons. One is we just talked about caterpillars. Caterpillars are kind of the power food for songbirds and other terrestrial birds when they're breeding. They primarily feed their young insects, and caterpillars are incredibly high in protein and fats, so they need lots and lots of caterpillars to feed their young. But wait, there's more. They also eat the berries of these plants in the fall. And again, the importance of these trees and shrubs being native is since they co-evolved, they start fruiting just at the time those birds that are either migrating or overwintering need those berries. And also the composition of those berries are really important because they are high in fat content, so the bird can really fatten up.
Okay, I'm convinced. I'm motivated.
You are?
I am.
I'm happy that you're motivated.
But now, how do I go about selecting what I should buy and plant? What factors should I consider? Because my own opinion is going to matter here, too, and what my aesthetic is.
Yeah, aesthetics obviously really important because when you're planting a tree or shrub, you're obviously investing significant amount of money usually, and also time. So you want to think through landscape characteristics like the size and the shape of the plant. You wouldn't want to plant an oak tree up against your house probably because it's going to be 50, 75 feet tall. You want to think about flowers and bloom time, or do you want a particular type of flower? Do you like to have an amelanchier that's blooming early in the spring, or do you want to have a plant like a buttonbush that's blooming in mid-season? You want to think about fall color and fruit. Some plants have beautiful fall color, and some plants have beautiful fruit. And you want to think about winter interests. There's plants that are architecturally really interesting. That's kind of the aesthetic piece of it that you'd think about with any tree or shrub when you're investing that time and money. You also want to think about the cultural conditions that it takes. You want to think about the zone. We're in zone here, zone 4 to 5B probably. So you want to make sure you're in the right zone. You don't want to buy a zone 6 plant. You want to think about the soil, the moisture, the sun requirements in terms of does it need sun or partial sun or shade. And for native plants, you want to think about the wildlife value. Again, I always say if you want to support wildlife, you plant native trees and shrubs because there are plants that are host plants for butterflies, as we talked about. There are pollinator-friendly plants. Does that plant have fruits and seeds for the birds? Is it a good plant for shelter and nesting, like a white pine is a great shelter plant? Is it subject to diseases? You probably wouldn't want to plant an ash tree right now because of emerald ash borer. Does the plant have climate resiliency? That's a new term that we're hearing. And that's a plant with climate change that can take, you know, heavy rainstorms. We had a very heavy rainstorm last night. Can it take heavy rainstorms? Does it have a wide range, like a red maple? You'll see red maples native to the whole way down the eastern seaboard. So that's a plant that if it starts getting warmer here, it's probably going to be okay, whereas a sugar maple might not be okay. And then finally, can you get it? I mean, is it something that's easy to find in a nursery? I mean, is it something, or is it something really obscure? Those are kind of the characteristics that I would look at for any tree or shrub, but most especially if you're buying a native tree or shrub.
So all natives aren't the same as far as what they provide? I mean, I can't just stick a native in there and have it be all happy with a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, I think that, you know, if you are investing money in a tree or shrub, I always say, there's an opportunity cost if you're planting something that's non-native and you really want to support wildlife, but not all natives are created equally. I think that's what you're getting at. And Doug Tallamy, who wrote the kind of famous book, Bringing Nature Home, and he's also written a book recently on oaks, all about oaks as well, uses the phrase keystone species for the the species of trees and shrubs and perennials that he says as pieces in an ecosystem that other species depend upon. They're usually plants that support a large number of insects. And, you know, obviously our insect populations are going down, and insects are really important for birds. So we're talking about things in terms of trees and shrubs like keystone species such as oaks, birches, cherries. Those are some of the keystone species that are super, super important in the ecosystem. So they're not all created equally, but I think if you're looking to support wildlife, you want to plant a diversity of different trees and shrubs. So you're really supporting a bunch of different types of insects and birds.
So if I really, really, really like butterflies, I can plant a bunch of butterfly pollinators, but not do any harm to anybody else.
Yeah, well, I think there's this misconception that if you plant a bunch of perennials, that you're going to have butterflies. But you need to have those larval plants, which in many cases are hardwood trees and shrubs. They might be grasses. They might even be weeds. So you need to have the larval plants almost more important, because the butterfly's habitat is really going to depend more upon the larval plants than on the pollen plants.
I did read somewhere that these keystone species provide 90% of all the insect food?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah, so an oak tree, if you're going to plant any tree, and I was just talking to my sister about this, she was thinking about planting a tree, and she loves birds, and I said, if you're going to plant any tree, a native oak is incredibly important. It supports so many different caterpillars, so in turn, it's going to support so many different bird species as well.
But if I put that cherry orchard in, that'd be pretty good oak too, right?
Well, cherry orchard, you're talking about a different type of cherry tree. If you're talking about a real cherry orchard, that's probably not going to support. There's non-native cherry trees that support kind of no insects, but a black cherry or a choke cherry will support upwards of 500 different caterpillars.
I can do a choke cherry orchard.
A choke cherry orchard, yeah. You probably can't eat those choke cherries, and they're called choke cherries for a reason, because they're kind of really astringent.
We used to eat them when we were kids.
Okay, That actually explains a lot.
It does.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's do a lightning round.
A lightning round? I don't know if I'm prepared for a lightning round or can say prepared.
That's the beauty of a lightning round. Tell me your top choices for flowers.
Native trees and shrubs with flowers. Buttonbush. A buttonbush is a beautiful, really unique kind of round flower that's a great nectar flower. Plant those in wet areas. Bottlebrush buckeyes and red buckeyes are beautiful flowers, almost look tropical. Redbud's a native tree, and a lot of people don't know that. It looks almost kind of artificial, but it has really beautiful purple flowers, so there's a lot of different cultivars. And one that a lot of people don't think of called flowering raspberry, that's the common name for it, and I'm blanking on the Latin name, but that's a great flowering plant, a beautiful flower, and will grow in pretty deep shade as
well. It's not a tree, though.
No, it's a shrub. It's in the raspberry family. It grows like a raspberry, but has these beautiful pink flowers and will grow in shade.
And the berries taste good.
And the berries taste, and the birds eat the berries too. You're out there foraging, aren't you? You're foraging.
That's right.
It's always about food.
This brings me to another. When you talk about redbud, I always think about the flowering dogwood.
Dogwoods, yes. There's a lot of different dogwoods. There's flowering dogwood, which is Cornus florida, which has beautiful blossoms. It is subject to anthracnose, but there's a cultivar called Appalachian Spring, which is resistant. I have a couple of those. They're beautiful. Alternifolio or pagoda dogwood, beautiful, like take some shade. And then there's a bunch of dogwood shrubs. They're really good wildlife plants. They're a little bit rougher looking, but those are great wildlife shrubs if you want to plant like a grouping, a hedge of wildlife shrubs, yeah.
Okay, next lightning round.
Yeah, lightning round.
Foliage.
I like ninebarks. They have a bunch of different cultivars, different lime colors and burgundy colors. Sumac, there's a bunch of different native sumacs, fragrant sumac, and other sumacs that have beautiful fall color. Tupelo or black gum, stunning, stunning red fall color. I don't know if you've ever planted a tupelo.
How far north are they?
I have them in my garden. They're beautiful trees.
You're
really
in 5B?
5B, okay. Yes. Sassafras, really interesting leaves and really beautiful fall color. And sourwood, which is probably, it might be a little bit not as winter hardy as you might want. I have grown it successfully, and that has beautiful fall color as well.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with that one. Okay, next.
You have to come to my garden. Are you going to come to my garden and see it?
Of course I will. I'll bring a picnic lunch.
Okay, yeah, because I'm not going to feed you.
That's right.
Exactly. You can eat the flowering raspberry.
Okay, fruits.
Okay, so I don't know if you grow winterberry. That's one that's beautiful in the winter and can take some wet. Chokeberry, a beautiful, beautiful bearing fruiting plant. Elderberries, persimmons. There's a native persimmon that is also edible if you let it ripen. And then, I don't know, have you ever grown a pawpaw, Jean?
I have a baby pawpaw.
Pawpaws. I have pawpaws that are fruiting. I'm going to bring you some. They're really not technically native to our area, but they grow in zone 5. So those are, you know, all really good fruiting plants. They're all of those plants are larval plants for different butterflies as well. So you can't go wrong with those.
I just love to say pawpaw.
Pawpaw.
All right, listen, if I wanted to take a field trip, where would you suggest I go on this field trip to see nice displays of native plantings?
Yeah, I always like to go out to gardens or arboretums, or if there are open days with gardens, I like to see other people's gardens to get ideas. Locally, Mountaintop Arboretum in Greene County is a great place to go for natives. They've done a huge native planting around their visitor center. Landis Arboretum in Schenectady is a good place to go. If you want to go further south, the Highline in New York City. Almost all native plants. Really interesting that it's kind of on this railroad bed. I don't know if you've ever gone. Really great ideas for native plants there. The New York Botanical Garden has a specific native plant garden, which is beautiful. And again, it has a lot of different perennials and it has a lot of different woodies as well. So lots of different places to go. Cornell in Ithaca has a plantation garden, which has a lot of natives as well. So there's really a lot of places to go to look at plants before you go and buy.
Okay, one last question. Aren't natives hard to find? I know they used to be. Where would I go if I wanted to see a good selection of native trees and shrubs to buy?
They did used to be hard to find. I think it become much more popular because people understand the importance of natives. Locally, we talked to Eli from Green Bee. He's got a lot of beautiful native plants. There's a nursery, so specialty nurseries like Catskill Native Nursery in Kerhonkson. Pondside in Hudson has a lot of native plants. And then if you're really looking for something that you can't find locally, online, there's an online company called Coldstream Farm that sells bare root natives. I've bought plants on eBay. It's a little sketchy at times, but a lot of times you can find really obscure things if you're looking for something really specific. And then a really good place to go is your local county soil and water conservation. They have spring sales with a lot of different native plants, bare root, and very inexpensive as well. So, Jean, there's no excuse to not plant a native plant. You can find them in a lot of different places.
Okay. Well, I think I've learned a lot about native trees and shrubs, and I hope our listeners have too. Thanks so much, Tim, for sharing your knowledge of this area.
It's great talking to you about it today, Jean. Thanks.
And thanks to all of you out there for listening in.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene County's Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.